Although the official U.S. combat mission in Afghanistan ended at the end of last year, military leaders have been clear all along that they will continue to need funding in their overseas contingency operations accounts to pay the cost of drawing down from the country and repair equipment that was damaged in the war. But the latest analysis by the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, based on early media leaks of the budget DoD will propose on Monday, says those costs don't come close to explaining the size of what's reported to be a $51 billion OCO request for 2016. It's more likely, according to Todd Harrison, the center's senior fellow for defense budget studies, that DoD is once again moving spending from its base budget and into its OCO accounts, because OCO is exempt from sequestration.
That is funding that appears to be in excess of need.
Harrison draws the conclusions from an analysis of how much it's cost to fund each service member deployed to Afghanistan over the past decade. From 2005 to 2013, the numbers were remarkably constant at about $1.2 million per troop per year. Things changed in 2014, the year after the Budget Control Act caps kicked in for the first time. The OCO spending per deployed service member nearly doubled that year. This year, there are $4.5 million OCO dollars being spent for every service member, and the 2016 request will mean almost $4 million per service member.
So why is that? Well, obviously, we've got this loophole in the law. There's an incentive to put money in there. And if you read DoD's detailed budget descriptions for the OCO funding, they do hint at this. They start talking about how the funding for Afghanistan supports operations in Afghanistan. It also supports operations outside of Afghanistan that support troops in Afghanistan. Okay, that's fair. But then it also talks about how that money is also being used for our presence in the Persian Gulf region, for operations in the off the Horn of Africa, for operations in the Philippines. You start to think, wait a second, there seems to be a lot of things in there that aren't actually Afghanistan.
Harrison says it's difficult to track exactly what's going on, to point to specific areas of the OCO budget that are perhaps being used inappropriately. That's because a huge proportion of that request and the base budget is made up of operating and maintenance dollars, a particularly opaque part of the budget. But in fairness, even though Congress has not found a way to reverse the Budget Control Act, it has also been more than willing to use OCO as a safety valve for DoD without undoing sequestration.
In FY14, for example, you can look right in the appropriations bill, they did that for about $10 billion worth of items. They said, we are taking this out of DoD's base budget request, and we're moving it to the title of the appropriations bill that is OCO funding. Okay, they're allowed to do that. They can declare anything they want to be OCO funding. The law is pretty simple that way.
Also, in fairness, DoD officials have not been shy about the fact that they intend to continue using the accounts that were originally set up for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for things that don't have an obvious nexus to those operations, including several of the Middle Eastern military facilities that are now being used as launching points for strikes against the Islamic State in Iraq and in Syria. In a speech at the Center for a New American Security earlier this week, Robert Work, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, confirmed that DoD will propose a budget that would violate the Budget Control Act, and said the global security strategies it's working off of right now still hold, despite recent global crises in the Middle East, Africa, and the Ukraine. He says DoD started building its budget back in the fall of 2014 when it was still, as he said, early days in the Ebola outbreak, the Islamic State's territorial gains in Iraq, and Russia's incursion into Ukraine.
So we started with one important question. Did these surprises fundamentally change the assumptions that underpinned our current defense strategy that was outlined in the 2014 Quadrennial Defense Review? And we looked at the force planning construct to the degree, and we asked ourselves, has it changed? And the short answer that we concluded in the fall review was no, at least not yet. We think the strategic priorities that were identified in the QDR, and there were five of them, rebalancing to the Asia-Pacific region. Two, maintaining a strong commitment to security and stability in Europe and the Middle East. Three, sustaining a global counterterrorism campaign. Four, strengthening key allies and partnerships. Five, and prioritizing key modernization efforts. And we think those five priorities still are germane.
In terms of the shape and size of the U.S. military, Work says the 2016 budget will reflect that DoD's current plans are still about right, with one exception. It needs much more intelligence, reconnaissance, and surveillance assets.
For all of those in this business, you know you can never have enough. It's a constant guess. And no matter where you end up, you always need more. So we're probably going to be, you'll see on Monday that we'll probably be adding more in that regard.
As to the rest of the Pentagon's forces, Work says DOD thinks it can continue to execute the defense strategy it's using right now as long as it gets the budgets it's asking for. As to modernization priorities in the 2016 budget, Work named several categories the department will put front and center. The department's nuclear enterprise, new space control capabilities, advanced sensors, communications, and munitions for power projection, missile defense, and cyber capabilities. To defend the military's own networks, Work says DOD will fully fund a critical part of the forthcoming Joint Information Environment, the joint regional security stacks that first began to come online last year.
Right now, the Department of Defense has over 1,000 firewalls that it has to defend on a daily basis. Just basic hygiene, people, you know, giving their code password to someone or doing something, that is an impossible problem. Through the JRSS, a relatively small, modest amount, we fully funded it, we will drop to 50 defendable firewalls by FY17. That will make us far more defendable as a network.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.